Hey, welcome to another episode of the Manufacturers Makes Right podcast. I'm your host, Martin Griffiths, and today I'm interviewing Miles Flamenbaum. He's the CEO of Actasys, and they're an innovative startup in automotive manufacturing. You know that these days, cars are completely filled with sensors, from parking assist through to other vehicle detection. Well, that's great, but what happens when those sensors get clogged up with dirt? They don't function as well, so what do you do? Well, Actasys are developing an innovative cleaning solution involving high-pressure directional jets. And Miles is CEO. He's involved in figuring out how they build their own manufacturing processes, how they license the solution to OEMs, and a bunch of other things. So we've got lots of really interesting lessons and experiences to dig into with Miles. So let's get straight into that now. Hey, Miles, good to have you on the podcast today. How's it going?
Very well, Martin. Thanks for having me. A pleasure. And yeah, just the end of year busyness. So looking forward to the end of this week and getting a little time off.
Yeah, it's a crazy time of year, isn't it? Yeah, everyone's looking forward to that break. So you're involved with Actasys, your CEO. Tell us, how did you get involved in that? It seems like quite an innovative startup. It's got quite an interesting product. Maybe you want to touch that as well. Yeah, how did you get into it?
Well, I'm happy to explain. So Actasys was actually founded at the very end of 2013. Its original focus was both generally in the field of aerodynamics, but more specifically, doing a lot of things that were supported by government and state grants. I joined as an advisor in 2017 and then became CEO in the beginning of 2018. And it was around that time that we pivoted towards sensor cleaning. So that sort of Actasys 2.0. So I'm sort of, if you will, a founder of the second act of Actasys. So our primary focus since that point has been on sensor cleaning with some other applications and, you know, clearly all rooted in some relationship to aerodynamics.
Got you. So I kind of understand the problem that, you know, you have a car that's reliant on all sorts of sensors. If they get dirty, you know, they don't work as well. I understand your solution, which is a jet that basically squirts that dirt off. Are there other solutions out there? What are car manufacturers doing, you know, before Actasys? Do they just let the sensors get dirty and they're just a performance degrades? Like, yeah, what happened?
They certainly did. And, you know, we're starting to move into, you know, I think if I take it to a higher level, there's been two significant trends that have developed over the past couple of years within the automotive sector. One is electrification, so the movement to electric, you know, platforms for power. And secondly, what I call sensorification, which according to the dictionary is not a word, but I'm determined to make it one, so please share it. With sensorification, now there's becoming much more of a reliance and an interdependence by the car manufacturers on the success and deployment of these optical sensors. So previously, you know, let's take, for example, the backup camera on your car, all right? Yep. If that was dirty, it was inconvenient, but it wasn't mission critical, and the driver could put the car in park and go out and wipe the camera.
Sure.
You're now getting to points where the vehicle itself is starting to participate or even take over driving decisions. So the availability and the uptime of those sensors becomes more and more critical. So now you have this advent of sensor cleaning. It's a very new field. And, you know, there are not yet a confirmed set of standards or an agreed methodology amongst the different car manufacturers. So it's a bit of the Wild West. What we've done is sort of taken upon ourselves to really understand the nature of the problem down to the physics level. Why does something on the lens cause that LiDAR or that camera to not be able to capture data? All right. We look at, for instance, a wide range of weather conditions. So we'll look at different types of mud. We have a recipe for, you know, synthetic bird poop, which, you know, if you want to post for your, your listeners, you're more than welcome to share. It evidently smells very much like the original. But, you know, we're trying to characterize all these things. What we've come to understand is that the ideal sensor cleaning system has to combine three core elements. All right. One is a jet of air. All right. And the jet of air is good for drying or removing raindrops or dust. All right. Liquid cleaning. So something that has a little bit more density, like the bird poop or like mud, where you can use that liquid in some combination with the air to move heavier contaminants, and then heat. So, you know, you'll have snow, you'll have ice, you'll have, you know, wintry conditions that require heat. All right. In order to bring those three things to bear, all right, within the context of a moving vehicle, all right, that has significant constraints on how much power you can consume, and also significant constraints on how much space is available to install and integrate these systems, it becomes very tight. Existing systems for cleaning, while they do provide both liquid and air, the air part of that system is typically provided by a compressor. All right. When you think about those constraints that I just described, a compressor can't meet them. All right. Our technology can, because, you know, it's 3 millimeters thin, it's only 96 millimeters in diameter, it uses only between a half a watt to 10 watts of power. It's electronically controlled, so it's not a mechanical source of an air jet. It's able to generate that air without a compressor, a pump, or a fan. So it provides a lot of flexibility in the system. We've taken it a step further in that we can use that jet of air to both provide the liquid spray, all right, but in a fashion that reduces the amount of liquid being consumed to generate that spray, another key constraint. And then finally, we can, you know, make heated air. So we're able to, you know, melt snow and ice. So we're able to provide automotive manufacturers a sensor cleaning system that reduces the system complexity and improves the efficiency and really meets all of their, you know, constraints and requirements that are being developed. But, you know, the general constraints of any vehicle as it's looking to develop components for production.
Well, okay. That's, it's, you know, it's going to be a big area, I guess, over the next kind of decade or so, isn't it? Yeah, it's going to be a big challenge. I kind of understand that you're looking at a couple of options at the moment as to whether you try to manufacture these devices yourselves, and there's a whole load of challenges, you know, within that of meeting the OEM standards, versus are you also looking at basically like licensing to OEMs directly. What do you see as the, how's that kind of working out? What do you see as the pros and cons in that?
So originally we were looking at getting very involved in design and development and optimization. But in terms of integration and production, we would do those functions under license. We're changing that. We have already changed parts of that in that we've already recognized that we need to get more deeper into integration. We need, and already have gotten deeper into the electronics and the communication protocols and a lot of the controls. So, you know, what we recognized at the outset is we need to be able to provide these actuator cartridges, which are quite novel. And it's a series of laminate layers that are sort of fused together. So we're making a sandwich, somewhat complicated sandwich, but still a thin sandwich. And we do it already. We know we had to do it currently for sampling at a higher level of quality. So we're moving in that direction in terms of improving our quality and consistency and controls. We recognize we need to start to produce them at low volume. And low volume, we're talking approximately no greater than 10,000 units a year. Mm-hmm. We knew we needed to do that for two purposes. One is sampling for the automotive sector. Automotive product development requires a lot of samples, and they have to be done under the right quality conditions. But we have non-automotive customers for sensor cleaning. So for example, security camera systems or traffic monitoring systems where a low volume manufacturing capacity can actually satisfy some of those customers. So we saw our way to that. We looked at it initially as this is a great capability to have for flexibility. It's a great capability to also learn how to scale to high volume. Mm-hmm. And for example, we'll talk high volume. Vehicle programs can be upwards of 75, 100,000 vehicles or even more. Let's say, you have four sensors on a program with 100,000 vehicles. You're now looking at 400,000 actuator cartridges for one OEM under one model on an annualized basis. So we're starting to realize, oh my gosh, the volumes are enormous. So it begs the question, how do we look at setting up manufacturing partnerships? How do we do that under license so that they can make the sandwich for us? Or is there a greater role that we can begin to play in terms of production, giving ourselves some more flexibility? The other complication that we look at is also, it's a global industry. So a lot of our current customers are actually in Europe. Where do you make in the context of where your customers are located? So as a small startup, these are sort of existential questions that we're really starting to work our way through, which is it's been a very positive challenge for us. But look, at the end of the day, we need to produce product that goes onto cars, and so we need to execute on that really well.
Yeah. So what have you learned from? So you manufacturing in the States at the moment, then with you on your lower
volume. We do it low volume in our own. I mean, it's literally happening right next to me. we can make a few hundred a week if we needed to. Or it's certainly a few hundred a month. So we make them at low volumes. It's just it's starting to scale the processes. Starting to scale the proper flows, starting to put in place the right quality controls, just all the baby steps that you have to go through to start becoming a manufacturer.
Yeah. So I guess you've kind of taken the business from scratch to building that manufacturing process and facility. What have you learned along the way?
So in terms of the low volume manufacturing, it's still in the planning process. I think we've learned that we need to really understand the inputs, right? In terms of planning, it's very easy to say, I need an oven. All right. But then when you start to think about, okay, who interacts with that oven? How do we set up the materials so that we can process in and out of the oven quickly and easily? How do we plan for the space? How do we plan for the safety? How do you plan for, goods in storage versus goods out and separating and quarantine? So it's all those unique features of a high quality manufacturing, capability that we're starting to think through. Oh, didn't think about that. So we clearly didn't think about a lot of things, but that's part of the learning process. And again, it's part of the motivation for us to do it was to go through that learning process. So at the end of it, as we're ready for higher volume, we've made a lot of the mistakes or understood a lot of the questions that need to be asked.
Yeah. So you're in a much better position to go to the next stage, and you know the things to ask the higher volume kind of contract manufacturers, because you've been through that.
I think equally as important is understanding and to be able to identify the people you need to hire in order to do it properly. So that's a key learning as well.
Excellent. So It's amazing, and it's really interesting that you've got to this point and being able to, to develop this kind of business. Do you have any kind of experiences from your career or any mentors that have kind of taught you useful lessons that have helped you get to this point?
Oh, goodness. Several. I mean, you know, it's funny when I look back, you know, we're very lucky right now. So, for example, you know, two of our investors, one is the Volvo Cars Tech Fund, the other one is NextGear Ventures. You know, our support from those board members, the advice that they give us, the guidance they give us, is invaluable. It's super helpful. I think, you know, we have a culture of beginning with, you know, the concept of, I don't know how to do this as well as other people. Therefore, I have to ask other people how to do it well. So we're very fortunate that way. I think when I look back, what stands out more to me, and I've thought about this recently, is not necessarily the situation I currently have now, where I have people who are providing positive guidance and support. I think what stands out to me more in the past is people I've watched make mistakes, or you know, people I've worked for who, you know, I really felt were not headed in the right direction or providing the proper advice, running into problems, and it allows me to then learn from those problems. So there's been both positive instances and what I would say sort of negative learning, or you know, learning from not repeating the wrong thing again. So it's healthy.
That's interesting. So I guess it sounds like your philosophy is to kind of approach everything with a learning mindset and kind of being open to, to assuming that you don't know best, basically, that
You know, my kids remind me quite often that
there's
clearly I don't know best, so I might as well follow their advice.
They do, yeah. Kids are definitely good at putting you in your place. I know that's excellent. So we're right at the end of 2021. We've had, another kind of slightly challenging year with COVID. What are your kind of hopes for 2022, or what are the big plans?
Gosh, you know, hopes. Yeah. So I would love all of a sudden to wake up one morning and not hear about this virus anymore. That would be really nice. I will get there. It's just you know, the road is rather twisty and turned. You know, for I think that's a hope for everybody. For the company, we're in a really sort of entering into a critical phase, which is we're getting much deeper into commercialization. So, you know, establishing partnership and commercial agreements with, you know, major players in the automotive sector, getting to be part of vehicle programs. These are things that will all happen in the next several months. We're very excited about how that sort of sets us up for, you know, going down the path towards the future. The same with some of the non-automotive things. With, you know, those opportunities, while they're smaller, they have less constraints, so they can move a little faster. So we're actually hoping to even close on a program that will go into production, hopefully within about 12 months. So it's, you know, that's all very exciting. And yeah, you know, raising our next round of capital to really allow us to grow and expand. We have a lot of interest in the product. You know, we're putting all those support or foundational pieces into place, including manufacturing, as we've discussed, to really build this, you know, ship. And ultimately, we'd like to light it and take off. So it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, it sounds it. Just want to really touch back on something you mentioned there, because it occurred to me before. You mentioned that the pace that things happen with some of these automotive programs can be quite lengthy, quite slow, I guess. What's your perspective on that? Because it's quite a different kind of culture, isn't it? In a startup, everything happens quickly. It's very agile. Things change kind of day to day sometimes. What's your attitude of how to work best with, kind of companies or, who've got much longer kind of timelines and timescales?
You know, look, it's very frustrating because we do want things to move fast. That all being said, you know, this is the first time that you know, our team is going through this process. there's a lot to learn there. While, you know, we're sort of getting into a vehicle program right now that goes into production at the end of 2024. All right. That seems interminable, but between here and there, there is an enormous amount to do. You know, getting qualified to provide a component to a vehicle manufacturer is a strenuous, strenuous process. So, you know, my best suggestion is, you know, look at those processes, look at what those requirements are. Do they move slow only because they move slow? Or do they move slow because it seems like it's slow, but what's actually happening is a lot of work and effort to get things really, really right. Right? That's what we're dealing with. And I think the best suggestion is patience. You know, it's frustrating. It's not what your startup mindset is. But on the other hand, you know, if you're delivering to your customer in that long process, what they want when they want it, all right, and you're learning through that, that's a recipe for success. So it's just really tight coordination with your customers.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks for that. Couple of quick ones to finish up. Do you have any tools or techniques that you particularly kind of like rely on to help you day to day or week by week?
Yes, I make my entire team completely nuts every day. Today I did because we're doing a bunch of things, so I'm pushing on details. But you know what we find, you know, my view of management, my view of growing a startup is to only put in processes or only start to layer in bureaucracy when it's absolutely necessary, because I don't want to slow people down. I want to burden them unnecessarily. In addition, when you get to a point of wanting some control or process, build it and enroll the people who need to be part of it. Let them build it, because that becomes much more successful than something that's dictated. So, you know, what I find for myself and just interacting, you know, I think there's two key things. One is just a good CRM, so that you're really tracking the conversations and the information with your customer conversations. And then internally, I just have a really good to-do list. So I use Microsoft To-Do. Not a plug. It's just, you know, if I don't write thoughts down and I don't keep track of them and then figure out a good way to share them, things just get lost. So I try not to be overbearing. You know, it's all about, you know, asking questions, getting a feel for information and progress and flow, and talking to people at the right times just to make sure that things are on track.
Yeah, I totally agree about the to-do list. It seems so simple, but for me, it was one of the big things that stopped me, like waking up in the morning at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking, I need to do that. If you know it's on paper or in, you know, a digital format, you can relax slightly more at the end of the day.
It connects between my phone and my laptop, and therefore I can never get away from it.
that's a downside. Yeah, that's true. Great. Thanks very much, Miles. What's the best way for people to find out more about yourself or about Actasys?
Yeah. So for Actasys, it's Actasys Inc., Actasysinc.com. I'm on LinkedIn, you know, Miles, M-I-L-E-S, Flammenbaum, Flammenbaum, or info@actasysinc.com is a great email. Certainly happy to provide any assistance or help or guidance or suggestions or even a bon mot. So whatever I can do to help. I'm a big believer in entrepreneurial karma. So, you know, I try and give as good as I get.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, thanks very much for those insights, Miles. Really appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you. Have a great day. And enjoy the holidays.
Likewise.